Good evening, everyone. Welcome to our webinar, The Role of Data in Customer Success, Leveraging Insights to Drive Better Outcomes.
In today's session, we're going to unveil a few tactics on how you can get your data capturing and data analysis more mature. So I'm excited.
Let's start by chatting about customer data frameworks. Can you give us a quick rundown on what they are and why they matter?
First and foremost, I want to share like why they matter. I think it's really important for us to actually really understand that it's not just about collecting some data and then doing something with it. And I think when you collect data with intent, your data collection and how you're using it is going to make a big, big difference. So that's why I want to start from this. Customer success, the formula is CS equals customer experience times customer outcomes. What we want to do in CX is to improve customer experience and to deliver more and more outcomes over time. So if right now your net retention rate is lower than 100%, it's probably because you haven't figured out yet outcomes. And so the value provided customers is relatively low to your competitors, let's say that, or the customer experience is poor, or your relationship with customers, there's a lot of accounts that you don't touch, or like you don't know who to connect with, you don't know them very well. And so you might be here. Our goal is to get here. And so a lot of times we need to not only launch new initiatives, but we need to be able to track, are we improving over time in our CX score? And then are we delivering more and more value over time? At a stretch, like this is what we want to do. And then we want to do it at scale. So essentially, we want to gauge for productivity and impact. Are we doing the right things? Are we doing it in a scalable way? We want to gauge for customer satisfaction. You want to gauge for advocacy, relationship scores. And then for CO, we want to say, are we giving our customers value? Are they reaching their goals? Are they using the right things? Have they adopted whatever we recommended? And is it aligned with the processes that they have? And so when we're thinking about customer, like what data should we be tracking and what is the framework that we're looking to impact, is to really say, do we have an effective customer success framework?
Now, because you mentioned this, how can we make sure that what we are capturing is actually relevant? And because, again, you said that there is a lot of data. How do we know what to focus on, what's important and what's not?
Maybe I can share a little bit more around, besides this high-level framework, what do we typically do and then how do we prioritize? I think there's a lot of considerations on what to prioritize. But in general, what the company wants you to track is there's data that's more like outside in, and then there's data that's going to be outside out, if you will. First, we want to say, are we providing business value to ourselves, to our customers? Do we provide an experience value? Does it have an impact? So want to track performance, business experience. Over time, what we're expecting is from experience value, this is the easiest thing to improve. It really is. If you're going to tackle something first, this is the first thing you want to tackle. Are we tracking the right things? Is this the right metrics? Business value, obviously, we want to not only provide value, but we want to have faster value. So a lot of times companies would track things like first value delivered. And then performance, this would be like, do we actually impact the company's revenues? That could be upsell, retention, renewals, even new sales deals. Are we increasing tenure? Do customers actually stay with us for a long time? Are we lowering costs? That's also a key performance for us. And then are we increasing advocacy, which ultimately helps with the revenue, especially for new logos? So how do we know that we're tracking the right things? First of all, make sure, ask yourself, do I have metrics to actually gauge for each one of these things? This would be more about any kind of customer success initiatives, whereas this is going to be about your business success. And this is a model that was developed by Deloitte a while back. I think it's really great to just keep track and then say, out of all the metrics that I have, where am I in red, yellow, or green? I would say most companies are really good at tracking their revenues, and they're not really great at tracking whether or not they deliver business value or how fast they do it. Some are really great at experience because CX has been around for a long time. So I'd say in general, if I had to do a market research, probably this one would be in yellow or green, and totally red. This is the state of most of the market. How do you know which ones to track? I think you need to create a plan. Okay, you need to ask yourself, one, what is my company's go-to market strategy? How do I map to it? Some companies would say that they're going to grow using a land and expand. Is that your company's go-to market strategy? Is it consumption? Could be different things. It might be like upsell. It could be through M&As. Whatever it is, your metrics for performance will be derived based on the model. So we can expand on that. Secondly, what is the state of your customer success and its maturity? Where are you in red, yellow, green? And I'm not talking about your customers. If you're right now at 105 NRR, you want to get to the top echelon. Like if you actually had market research done, which we did, by the way, and you looked at the state of NRR in the market, there's very few that are above 125 NRR. And the average is anywhere between 103 and 107. So if you think that you're at 107 NRR and it's really good, I got news for you. The good is above 125. So how do you get to 125? Why aren't you there? You need to do some red, yellow, greens around different aspects of your customer success framework. You can look at things like adoption, onboarding. You could take a look at different things related to your customer success and say, red, yellow, green, where am I? If you're in red or yellow somewhere and you think that that might help impact an improvement in NRR, then ask yourself, what are the KPIs that I need to track this year and put an effort to actually have some fields in place in your Salesforce, your CS tools, whatever technology you're using to start keeping track on those, and then have the discipline of the CSMs and other team members to actually insert the data in and analyze it on a regular basis. So once you have a chance of like, all right, I decided the list of KPIs, you want to say, okay, is the data accurate and complete? If it's not accurate, how do I make it accurate? If it's not complete, what efforts do I need to make to get it complete? Is it missing completely? And if so, who should be tracking it? And do we need to create fields? What kind of format should be fields? But this exercise here would tell you, what should I be tracking now? What is most important right now? And then, of course, you can always do this sort of like Pareto exercise of saying, what would be the impact if I did track these KPIs? Like if it's already available, then obviously, and it's high impact. So this is the availability or availability effort. So if I already have it, whether it's low or high impact, I'm probably going to start tracking it immediately. If it's not available, what is the effort of getting it available? If it's high impact and it's not available, go start tracking it immediately, like start working on tracking. Maybe you need to install an application to track usage and define what usage metrics you're going to track, and then getting into a dashboard and getting some calls to action around it. If it's not impactful, just nice to have, and it's a lot of effort to create it, maybe you don't do it at all. Maybe you wait until next year so you can improve.
You mentioned the business value. And yeah. You said that most of the companies are on red. What's the data? So in order to be able to measure correctly and show the business value, what type of data do you need? And why do you think that everyone is on red, where the industry in general is on red? I remained with this.
With this part. I'm not saying 100, but when I say everyone, obviously I'm exaggerating. But if I had to take 10 companies and I'd say, how good are you at tracking business value, or how good are you at tracking business, whether or not you provide data, you provide value to customers that probably are not great at it? Look, it's very hard to track, and every client might be different. So there's very few people who actually, or companies that actually have a very disciplined way to track value. And some of them just struggle because it's really hard for them to even define what is the value. So There's a few metrics that you can actually use for measuring companies' value you provide to customers. And especially if this is very difficult for you, this might be an approach you want to take. I have a video on my channel with Chris Singh. So he talks about how he created a value score for his customers. But I mean, you could do a straight up ROI. I have another video with Eyal Maor who explained how he's actually tracking ROI calculation for each and every customer. That's great for, by the way, high touch clients on monday.com. And you can do that too if you have a very simple business model and you can calculate it and it's inside your application. For example, I had another person that had a video with me. They can actually calculate the ROI inside the application. So that's really, really easy too, if that's the case. So these guys got it down. If the ROI is very clear and they can calculate it in-app or they have a discipline for it, great. And it's a high-touch model, that's usually not a problem. I think most of are in red because they are having a hard time figuring out what is their ROI. Secondly, I think some of them don't have the discipline to say, what is the time to first value delivered? So this is time to first value delivered. I don't know how many companies are actually tracking this, because from what I'm seeing, there's not a lot of companies that even track different milestones in onboarding, let alone know how to calculate it. Again, this video with Eyal Maor is actually really tracking this metric. And I think it allows him not only to track whether or not he delivers ROI, but how fast can he deliver an initial ROI? The reason they're in red is that they're having an issue understanding the ROI. They don't have the discipline to track milestones so that they can see how fast. And then the reason I mentioned Chris Singh is it's like, okay, every company has a different ROI. The use case is wildly different. What can we do? And so what he did, which I thought was really cool in terms of customer value, is he said, look, the value is not just the ROI they're getting on their business. They're actually using our product and attending training. If they're getting understanding like improvement in their business processes, if they're consuming XYZ, all kinds of resources that we have, any kind of resource consumption, then we can say, are they getting most? So the ROI for him was, how much value are they getting from the engagement with us? Yes, they can just use the tool, but that's very low value. What we want is to be a true partner. Can we measure our true partnership with them? So are they leveraging our consultancy services? Are they reading our blogs, going to our conferences to get exposure to best practices? Are they adding product training so they're always using the latest features? So he kind of like communicated back to his customer. He actually created a value score and he shared it with the customer. So it was a value scorecard that he created for customers. And because the ROI was a little tough to calculate, he actually had a lot of different aspects for the customers to say, hey, are you getting the most out of our partnership? Are you getting the most value?
Awesome. I want to understand one thing. You mentioned the connection between the go-to-market strategy and the SEO strategy. Can you provide an example? Let's pick the land and expand. And if you go with the land and expand, how this type of strategy, go-to-market strategy, influences the CS? What shifts or what changes or how should the CS organization align if, for instance, we pick the land and expand?
Okay, so listen, land and expand is a little different than upsell, although maybe upsell is a type of land and expand, but it just means that the company has a really mature upsell strategy. Usually it means that the company, when they first secure a customer, they sell them one thing, but they actually have additional satellites that they can sell. It could be additional modules. It could be additional product. But when they sell them on it, it's just this one single use case. It could be also that the one thing that they sell is a single site. And they know that their customers typically have multiple sites. Think about manufacturers, right? They might start with the manufacturing facility in China, but then they might also want to go to Taiwan and maybe they have one in the US and other areas. Their hope is that if they do a good job in one thing, the customer is then going to expand to additional use cases, sites, modules, or products. When we have a customer success organization, with a company that actually has that type of use case, we actually need to make sure that A, we have a customer journey that understands that, okay, we start with this. And so how do we proactively create conversations where we can talk about those different opportunities, capture customer value, et cetera, and kind of like move the customer to add additional, whatever it is, modules, products, sites along their journey. And so we need to actually track data that suggests a few things. One is propensity. How do we create a red, yellow, green light or a score that suggests that the customer has the propensity right now to expand? Maybe it's external data, like news that they acquired another company, or actually they're very engaged. They gave us a moment of value, declaring that they had a certain value with us. They agreed to that. We got some wins with them. It could be that they hired a bunch of people, whatever it is. There might be like a score where we can actually gauge for propensity and then start conversations around expansion. We want to track CSQL. For those who are not familiar, that's customer success qualified leads. So we want to track CSQL, assuming that whether or not the team is actually closing those qualified leads for upsell, we actually want to know what was the conversion rate. So what was the percentage of win for upsell or cross-sell, depending on the strategy? What was the actual upsell that was won based on CSQL? And all of those, these are going to be our lagging indicators of whether or not our CS strategy is correlated with this overall go-to-market strategy. If I'm like a really good customer success executive, I'm going to show you something that I use with my clients and how I map this out. I actually have something a little bit more extensive that I do with my clients, but I'm just going to share an example that was shared with us in one of the videos that we did with Duda Sedadeep. Basically, what he's done is he said, okay, there's going to be some input metrics and then some output metrics. I like to call those lagging indicators and leading indicators. So leading indicators would be, did we have CSQLs? Are we trending towards a better customer experience so we can have these conversations? And then output metrics would be, okay, our lagging, like over time, this is what we expect the impact to be. One thing that I like to add to this type of framework is behavioral metrics, because we know that sometimes when we launch a new process, in order to attach ourselves to this framework for mapping ourselves into the go-to-market, we actually need to impact behavior. So let's say we may want to track, just drive accountability from our CSMs, is to say, how many CSQLs have you generated? How many times did you do QBRs, EBRs, success plans? Those are behavioral metrics. I think that's another column that I would add here. If attaching myself to the go-to-market strategy would require some change management, if this is something that your CSMs are doing already, maybe track it anyways, just to show that there is a correlation between activities that your CSMs are doing to leading indicators, to the CSQLs, for example, and advocacy, to actual output metrics, which is the lagging indicators, which is how many accounts did we actually expand into. So hopefully that gives you a full answer to your question.
In the last example about value measurement, the Chris Science example, is that similar to customer health score, or how does that differ?
So it differs because it's a value score. A customer health score might include other things like customer satisfaction. It might include things like support tickets. I don't know. You know, every company is a little different. But I think that the value score is where you drive accountability. You leverage that scorecard to drive accountability from your customer to leverage all the resources you have available for them. It's a recent trend where you have more and more SaaS companies actually launching an academy for their clients. And so if clients don't opt into it, their propensity or ability to actually be super successful with you and be one of those best-in-class customers is lower, because internal knowledge is never going to be the knowledge that you can impart on your customers based on your experience with so many of them that has a similar use case. So if you had a value score for your clients, and one of those areas is whether or not you're leveraging the academy, the online academy that you've provided them, and you can show them that their performance is lower than what they want, you can pinpoint and say, listen, you need to be accountable and actually have X, Y, Z leveraged from our resources in order to be more successful. It's basically a tool to drive accountability, but it's also a tool to say, you're not getting the most value out of the relationship. We're not just a tool. We're actually here to show you best practices. And so that's how it differs from a customer health score. A customer health score is for you usually to say, is my customer becoming best in class? I would add things like, is the customer providing us advocacy? That's not something I would necessarily show a customer, but it's something that I might drive for myself. I might have a relationship score. Do I have an executive alignment with them or not? Probably won't show it to a customer, but a value score is all about answering the question, do you, Mr. Customer, leverage all the resources that we provide to you so that you can be best in class?
Behavioral metrics would be good leading indicators.
Yeah, I think some people would say that behavioral metrics are type of a leading indicator for sure. I think sometimes I like to separate it because I might say, if you do a QBR, then the leading indicator would be a deeper relationship with a customer. So we're expecting QBRs to regular touch points with customers to increase the relationship score with the customers, which will lead into obviously a higher NRR. Sometimes it's good to separate. So the way that I think about it is behavioral KPIs are things that are totally in the CSM's control, that are things that they're just are being asked to do. And then I can determine whether or not they're effective by saying, okay, I have 3 CSMs. They all done 10 QBRs this year, but then some of them had well attendance and some of them didn't. Then maybe it's a training issue or maybe the whole thing is not strategically correct, but you kind of want to separate the activities, in my opinion, a little bit, just to say, is what I'm asking my CSMs being effective or not. The value score, if you want to learn more about that and actually see example how SAP has created that value score, I recommend watching this video.
Awesome. Is there a connection between the type of customer success strategy a company has and the customer data they collect? For instance, if we follow high touch strategy approach, what type of customer data do we need versus in a tech touch approach?
Maybe we start at a high level. Like, what is the big difference between the two? The one thing to remember is that high touch is more consultative and then tech touch is more transactional, automated. So we're going to have a lot more consultative touch points in a high touch model versus a tech touch. And so the higher the CSM to customer ratio, the more I want to gauge whether my automated tech touch and digital experience is working. And by the way, with a high touch, I believe we can actually collect more specific data about the customer. Imagine you have 17,000 customers. All of them are less than $200 a month in MRR. You might not have like a deep relationship with everyone. You might really look into more engagement metrics and things of that nature. So just wanted to kind of like clarify why there might be like a big difference between the different data approaches. And so let's make a list of all the different types of data points that we might collect for customer data. One, obviously, product adoption. You know, the big difference, obviously, both high touch and low touch or digital touch, if you will, are going to collect that. I think the big difference is what are they going to collect? And so here, what I'm seeing for high touch, and this is would be digital touch. High touch, we might still collect usage data from the system itself. So usage trends, key features, all of that obviously would be very relevant for both, whether it's product-led or very sophisticated systems. The problem is when we have a very high touch model, sometimes we don't have access to it. You will find this in on-prem and things like that. So what do? You can actually make a list of the features or modules that they have purchased. If I have a pure digital touch and it's like a product, usually I would just basically track what features they're using in the system. It would be harder for me to say, what did each of them buy and then compare? You would see that less. So this is more common here. We'll actually have specific things like how many users and what is the utilization percentage. Here, I would say I would look into frequency of usage and depth of usage. And then I would also ask myself, I'm probably going to have some guided in-app tours. And so is that being used? is my digital experience being effective or not? Whereas here, I will take a look at, did they sign up for training? Do they have certificate? I'm not saying this is like completely true here and here, but this is kind of like trends, if you will. That's the big difference that I'm seeing. You might have all of them in all of them, but so that's why I'm having a hard time with your question, Irina, because I think it really depends on the company, the type of tool. It's not so much about high touch versus lower touch. It's more about, do I have access to usage? What is my solution like? Is it an enterprise solution or a product-led solution? I feel like that's more of the difference, but I'm just going to list out other things like team performance. Obviously, if it's a high touch, I'm going to have more touch points. And I would highly recommend asking yourself, am I tracking the key touch points with clients? Do I have a dashboard that says, if my guidelines for CSM is to have 3 or 2 QBRs per year and 1 executive business review and 1 success plan with a single update per year, am I doing that? Is my team doing that? Yes or no? Do you have a health check, like a technical health check done once a year? How often do they update the health score if it's manually update? Look, you're going to have a health score probably on both, but digital touch, it's going to be an automated health score. And here it's going to be a manual one. So that's kind of like what I'm thinking. You're going to have onboarding. Well, onboarding for high touch might be multiple months with multiple milestones. And maybe there's like a score at the end and there's multiple people involved. And it's like a little bit more risky and more comprehensive. Did we do the kickoff? How long did it take to produce all these milestones? Whereas if it's pure digital touch, I'm probably going to ask myself, what was the conversion rate for the onboarding? Was it successful? How long did it take? What are they using in the end? Those kind of things. And maybe also have an onboarding survey, which, by the way, I don't hear a lot of companies having an onboarding satisfaction survey, which as a side point, I really recommend doing, because at the end of the day, like I said, it's all about customer outcome and customer experience. If you're not gauging for customer experience, what are we doing here? How do we know what we know? All right. So then we have also for renewals. Look, renewals, if it's MRR, which is what most tech touches are going to be, then you don't really have a renewal metric. You're going to gauge for MRR, maybe NRR, GRR, but you're not going to have a lot of metrics related to whether the renewals process is a solid one, yes or no. So here, if it's an annual or a multi-year, you're going to gauge for how many were late, how many were early, how many of them we actually able to attach an upsell to, things like that. How many of them resulted in a downsell? And so it's going to be more robust metrics for renewals, for example, in a high touch versus a lower touch. And again, don't catch me on saying, well, she said, and it's not true. This is general trends, what I'm seeing as I'm working with these customers. Obviously, value and then product adoption, obviously, is kind of like sometimes hand in hand with these things. But time to first value delivered is something that I would probably recommend both of them to track, like how long before we believe the customer had an initial value. And then can we calculate the ROI automatically in app? Then we should totally do that as well. Otherwise, we want to definitely capture moment of value, collect that. And in a high touch, it's going to be much easier. Here, you might want to say, okay, advocacy. If they're giving us advocacy, obviously they got value. We're going to track NPS to see how happy they are overall with the product, with the experience with us, CSAT on support. Are they feeling like they're getting value out of that? CSAT for our training, all these things kind of gives us a sense of whether or not they're perceived to have value with us. And so you might want to have like almost the same metrics, unless you have more things to offer here. And you can have some leading indicators in here as well. So hopefully that gives you some sense of what would I track pending if it's high touch versus lower touch. Here it just says digital touch. Honestly, you might have more data points in high touch. And sometimes you have more data points in digital touch, especially with what relates to product adoption. And the real question is not whether the engagement is different, but actually, are we working with enterprise customers? Do we have an enterprise solution or a product-led approach? Those are the type of questions that will ultimately decide what kind of data points will we have to each one of these data pillars.
The conclusion that I draw based on what you just said is that the data categories are the same, regardless if we are talking about high touch or digital touch, but the KPIs might differ. When you start thinking of what should I track, basically they are the same, regardless of the strategy that you have in place, but KPIs are different. Would that be correct?
Yeah, exactly. I think the categories are the same, and you might have different, first of all, metrics that are available to track, and then different metrics that you may want to track. If you get anything out of this discussion, is first of all, ask yourself the right business questions. What is relevant for me as a CSM? What is relevant for me? If you think about it, like what I want you to really take away from this, just to make the right list of KPIs, is don't think, oh, for high touch, this is what I need. And then for low touch, no. What you want to think about is, given our engagement model, our product, and our go-to marketing strategy, what would a CSM need to know? And then out of that, what would their team leader or the CS leadership needs to know? And then the executive team and the board would have different questions as well. And what would be key right now to answer is obviously based on your red, yellow, green analysis on what to focus on with regards to the go-to-market strategy. And then finally, you may also want to ask yourself, what do customers want to know? You can't forget them. So some of the data that's important for maybe the CSM is also very, very relevant for the customer. So there might be an overlap, especially with the CSM data. But we want to give a thought around, what do customers want to know? And then can we share that in the app or in emails? What tools should we be using? What's the ultimate tech stack? There's a lot of solutions out there that are making it very easy for you to share data with customers in a digital manner. Tools like, I don't know if you've heard of those, like cast.app. Obviously, if you're using Customify or any of the CS solutions, you can use Ever After for Customer Hub and just make it permanently available for them in the app, accessible in their customer portal. You have AI tools like Involve AI that would analyze the data and give your team a lot of data that they recommend that you share with your customers. So those are the kind of things that you kind of want to say, what would be important for my customers? Obviously, Eyal Mayor was tracking it on Monday.com, and he was thinking, well, customers want to know how we calculate the ROI and want to get alignment on them. And he actually created a whole object to just track the ROI on Monday.com. So whatever you're using, whether it's your CRM system, always think about, what do I need to know as a CSM? What do the team leaders need to know to make sure that the team is working effectively and holding them accountable to the customer journey and the initiatives we think will impact the go-to-market strategy? And what do the executive team would want to know? I bet this is mostly going to be your lagging indicators, your output metrics, as Duda Sadeep likes to call it, or lagging indicators, as I like to call these. These are going to be your team performance KPIs, mostly leading and lagging indicators. And these would be behavioral leading and lagging indicators, because look, a CSM would want to know, am I doing what I'm being asked? Is this creating the right impact? And then how am I impacting the company? Am I on the right track? Am I focusing on the right things? So I think the lower you are, actually, the more you want to know. If you go to the board, they don't want to know about all these. They just want to know, bottom line, where are we? But then the customer might have like different things that they want to know that might not be in any of them. Like there might be more data points. You have to think about all of these.
Who throughout the organization should own the renewal aspect? Is it a CSM? Is it an account executive? Is it someone else?
I know some people have like a hard answer on this, and I actually think it really depends on a number of factors. Really depends on how complex is your product, and then how long does it take to actually sell? You kind of want to think about these things, because the more complex the deal is to even renew, the more you kind of want to outsource it out. Otherwise, what will happen is that your CSMs, especially in a lower touch model, all they do is going to be, they're going to become renewal managers. Even for high touch, let's say they have 4 accounts and they're up for renewal. What happens sometimes is when they own the renewal, they might damage their trusted advisory relationship. And so for very large companies, enterprise companies, sometimes it just makes sense to split the roles. Obviously, it's easier to hire people that know one thing versus know a lot of things. It's harder to hire someone that has sales skills, consultative skills, product skills, technical skills. So sometimes when the companies grow, what they do is they create specialized roles, then it's easier for them to hire for those roles. Now, that being said, if you're a small startup and it's easy to do an upsell, why on earth would you diminish the customer experience if it's a click of a button or two to get the upsell done? Give it to the CSM to do. If the renewal is evergreen, which means that it renews automatic and all you need to do is just remind the customer, I don't know, a few weeks, a few months before the renewal and everything else is very easy, why would you set up another team? You don't. You want to be very thoughtful of the customer experience with these kind of decisions. And that's all I'm going to say about the topic. If you want to explore more about why this is advised, I think it was created by Boaz Meor. He shared like a very thoughtful discussion around the topic. So you're welcome to watch it on my channel or read the blog.
How to distinguish tasks among account managers and customer success managers? At some point, both may collapse involving account management. To the CSM meeting with customer may lead customers' trust level to decrease.
I don't think every company should have account managers and success managers. And I definitely don't think that customer success managers are account managers. There's a lot of misconceptions around what is a customer success manager and how is that different. I had a customer success manager tell me, no, it's the same. I've been both. I was like, okay, probably not a customer success manager. So I highly recommend watching this interview with this lady. She used to be an account manager and now she's a customer success manager. And one of the things that she says in this interview, she goes, listen, when I was an account manager, I had goals every quarter and I had to hit that quota. All of my conversation was with my team leader was, is the customer going to renew? What are your expansions that you're anticipating? How are you going to hit your quota? Which accounts are you going to reach out to get that quota? The whole thing was about the quota, okay? When she became a customer success manager, that quota discussion was like, all right, secondary, what is the health of your account? How can we get them healthier? How can we get them engaged? How can we deepen the relationship? What else do they want to do? How are we going to get them to do it? It's like a completely different set of questions you're going to have with your team leader. So I don't think the roles are the same. I don't think they're driven the same. I don't think they're designed the same. Can an account manager become a CSM? Absolutely. Can every CSM become an account manager? Not so sure. So that's my answer to you.
Super.
If you need help with your customer data, your strategy around that, kind of think around that, welcome you to engage with me. I actually have private sessions and group sessions where you can actually join and create your strategy around that. I'm more than happy to help you with that. Hit me up on LinkedIn. I'll send you all the information and we'll go from there.